We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
The owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American Dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true international depression.
Mark Reardon.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we start the week. It's a Monday, and Dave Klein is back, and he's crabby like me. You okay, buddy? I'm worried about him, Sue, well, because he comes back his first day back from vacation. Not only is this his first day back from vacation, but you actually had a bit of a... Well, not consecutive, because you had me back, but I was on vacation, then Fred was on vacation, then you were on vacation, and then Sue was on vacation earlier. Are we all done with vacations for a little while?
Well,
I am.
A while.
I don't have any coming up until September at some point, just a couple of days. But the big chunks are gone for 2021.
Yeah.
But right. Welcome back, Dave. How you doing?
I'm great. I'd rather be on a lake right now, but I'm here.
He's a little tense. You know, when you take vacation from Odyssey St. Louis, that's our company here, you come back, you realize that the computers don't work and, you know.
I was yelling a lot before the show, cursing a lot. I kind of sounded like you.
I know, you did sound. You reminded. Yeah. It's not a good look, Dave. When you remind me of me, it is not a good look. You went where? You went to Norfolk Lake?
Yeah, I was at Norfolk Lake in Arkansas, kind of straddles the northern Arkansas, southern Missouri border.
Think they call that the home of COVID? Home of the Delta variant, Dave.
There's a lot of that down there, so we were careful with it. We did a lot of our grocery shopping ahead of time. We did a lot of the Walmart grocery pickups, which worked out well.
That's nice,
I mean,
right?
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily worried about me going anywhere, but it's my kids that are 5 and 2 that, God forbid, something would happen to them, I'd feel horrible. So we kept our distance, and if there's any place you can socially distance, it's the middle of a lake when you don't see a boat within, honestly, 2 or 3 miles of you.
So
it was great.
One of my questions was going to be, did you sense just sort of the vibe down there, but you did not, because you were kind of keeping yourself, right?
Surprisingly, there was one time my father-in-law went to the store. We ran out of beer. So
Go
my
figure.
Father-in-law, we sent him to the grocery store, and I said, "So what was it like? Were you the only one in there wearing a face mask, or what was the deal?" He said, "Surprisingly, there were a fair amount of people down there that had them on. So it sounds like they're." I don't know, more or less taking it seriously now down there. I'm not so sure.
Well, so I don't know if you were out and about once you got back here to St. Louis, and I was out over the weekend, and there were some locations. I mean, I legitimately got to a couple of places, and I did not have a mask in my car. I had forgotten it at home. I'm not in the habit of having a mask. So I went in, and even the employees didn't have masks on, so I didn't feel too problematic about that. Then I went, today I went to Costco on Manchester Road in West County. You know, boy, I knew that the mask police would be out there, so I didn't even risk that. I figured at that location I'd be tackled and, you know,
did
held
they still
down.
Have them at the front of the store?
They might.
A lot of places do.
Some of them do, right?
Yeah, right.
But I want to, you know, I'd rather wear my cloth mask that's dirty, that hasn't been washed in a few weeks, that has all the particles on it. Why would I want a new mask, Dave?
Right.
That seems silly, but no. It seems hit or miss. I don't know. Some companies or some businesses are I guess, enforcing it. But in case you missed this, Dave, it's completely unenforceable. So if someone does ask you about the mask mandate, tell them that it doesn't really matter and it's completely unenforceable and they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I was very confused by that. When I was looking at the headlines when I was gone, just checking out the news here, I was very confused by what was going on.
Well, it's confusing to a lot of people. You know what else is confusing? I'm going to show Sue Thomas a video here and you can explain what the hell this is. Can you see this right now? Because I'm at home earlier and I was watching this, so I recorded it on my iPad because I wanted you to see it.
Okay.
It's two scary German girls making faces and diving in the water. What is this madness?
I am completely obsessed with this now. It's synchronized swimming, right? But they have changed the name, Mark.
Yeah, because it's not only swimming. They're like diving in the water too.
To artistic swimming.
Ah.
It's artistic swimming because although synchronicity is part of it, most of it is also, you know,
creepy?
The dance moves.
Most of it's creepy?
It's not creepy. There's maybe a slight creep
factor. Look at these two going at it here.
But think about this. See, isn't that cool?
Look at that.
When they
show
the shot underwater, these women were down underneath water, and they got extra points because they didn't come up for air for a minute 50.
Oh, that's just stupid.
It's insane.
Wait, a minute 50?
Yes.
Ooh, how do you do
that's
that?
Impressive.
That's impressive.
You hold your breath, Dave. I think that's
what's impressive. I know, but that's got to be impossible.
You're not a smoker, I'm guessing.
You are not a smoker.
Clean. You don't have COVID, and then you hold your breath.
It's incredible.
Let me just say this, because
it may not be for you.
What I'm watching is it really is kind of incredible what they're doing. However, here's where I draw the line. I just would say that because I heard the announcers talking about their facial expressions and how that's a part.
It's part of it.
It's not. It should not be a part of it.
But
you get points for that.
Points for your No. This is where I draw the line. In Olympic competition, you're not getting points for how your face looks. No.
That is why they changed it from synchronized swimming to artistic. So the word artistic encompasses all of that. It's acting.
But is that
in the water?
But is that an Olympic sport? Is that something that is?
Listen,
you know,
handball is, and that.
Yeah, but
you know.
It's not because. Yeah, but those are things. Ping pong, whatever else.
But
they're. But you're not. You're not judged. You're not winning the match because you smiled or you looked kind of goofy when you were making faces and stuff. That's kind of where I think it's different.
But in gymnastics, you know, there's also artistic points for
floor
exercise
that
and stuff like that.
Right.
So this is just, you know. Taking it to the pool. It's taking it to the pool.
Don't they have gymnastics with the balls and the different things you throw around too?
Oh yeah, with the
hula
stuff
hoops
and the things. Remember that? What do they call that?
Do they have that?
I think they still have that.
You're right about that.
Has anybody watched Trampoline yet? I keep seeing that's supposed to come.
That's real too.
Yes, I haven't seen any.
I see it in my neighbor's backyard with my daughter almost on a regular basis.
Wait, what do they call that with the flags and the whatnot? Oh, I know what you're talking about,
rhythmic,
Dave.
Rhythmic gymnastics.
That's it.
That's it. That's
okay.
It.
So rhythmic gymnastics. And frankly, I think that the artistic swimming and the holding your breath and doing all that crazy stuff in water is more impressive than the rhythmic gymnastics. But that's just me.
I think you're right about that. I would say that's more impressive. I mean, when I was watching what those women were doing, the minute 50 underwater, that is quite impressive. It's almost like this is a little different because they're only going, I guess, maybe 60 seconds. When I was watching some of the sprints in swimming, like the 100 meter, they're only coming up. Maybe they're not coming up for air at all, or they're just coming up one time, just all the way
across.
You're right.
For the 50, they do not breathe.
Yeah, not
at
all.
We watched it.
And
I think that's one length.
In the men's, several of the men in the 100 did not breathe either. There were a couple that came up
for one. What, down and back?
Yeah.
Down and back is the 100.
For
the 50, they don't breathe.
Yes, okay. That might be right.
And the ladies, either. It's incredible to watch.
So John Ziegler was on the show, Dave. Zig was back with us last week talking about a bunch of stuff. When you were gone, obviously everything happened with Simone Biles. What's your take on Simone Biles, just out of curiosity? Because Sue and I, our positions evolved.
Yep.
I believe that I had a certain amount of empathy because I've had experience with mental illness and, you know, anxiety, although I questioned, you know, whether or not you had to completely quit on the team. Now, she's back in the...
Doing the
balance beam tonight. I say she can do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
I don't see why we have to judge people.
When I read more about what it was, the twisties, which I guess is the gymnastics equivalent of the gyps.
Yeah. I think it's more serious than that just because
right.
You lose you know what it's almost like when remember when Roger Brand you used to fly, Sue, right?
Yeah, we were in the same
Roger described what happened with Kobe Bryant in sort of a similar way that you get up sometimes, and that pilot, probably because of the fog, got very disoriented.
Yeah, and you have to go to instruments only. You can't judge your senses.
But in a sense, that's what happened in midair to Simone Biles. But I brought up Ziegler because, and you probably won't like this, but I'm going to toss it in anyway. Did you see what happened to the women's soccer team?
They did not do well.
They did not. They lost to Canada. So Ziegler tweeted out, "No worries, USA soccer fans. The super woke USA team could still leave the Olympics being considered heroes if they simply withdraw from the bronze medal game due to mental stress."
Ooh.
That's tough. It's a pretty good line, though. It is it's cutting. It's biting. Sue's not commenting on it.
I think after reading Rick Ankiel's book, I have a lot more empathy for what Simone Biles is going through.
That is a really good point.
Yeah. He went through, I mean, obviously not what she did, but kind of the same sort of scenario, just a mental breakdown.
And it really, somebody who's reached the Simone Biles level, she's 24 years old, you think she didn't want to compete just to be fun?
Right.
I mean, of course she did.
Can we say what happened with some of the other gymnasts? Because we did quite well today, I think.
Yeah, it's in Sue's news.
Jade Carey. I like her. I like Jade Carey.
Yeah,
I watched her when
really
she was
cute.
Here in St. Louis. And then there was somebody else that did pretty well.
Yet. But, I'll get to
all right,
it.
We'll get to that in Sue's news. Let me get to Bill Maher on the Olympics, because he talks about the wokeness, and I thought this was pretty good, on his show on Friday night.
And finally, new rule, please don't make the Olympics into the Oscars. Oh, what's that? They did already?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. You know, back in April, when the Oscars aired, I commented in this space that the theme of that evening was, "We dare you to be entertained."
By the way, he's right about that. And we've talked about the Oscars for several years now, and they don't seem to care that they alienate people.
Right.
I guess that crowd doesn't really care, but the audience keeps shrinking and shrinking and shrinking.
Your mind waver for a few hours from thinking about the sad things and bad people in the world. Well, thank God we found some of those bad people in the Olympics now, and not a moment too soon. The director of the opening ceremony was fired hours before the event, because they found out there was a Holocaust joke in a comedy routine he did decades ago. Well, you know, context is everything. Obviously, it didn't strike people as beyond the pale at the time. Young people have to stop flattering themselves that they're Nostradamus and would have foreseen, had they been around then, everything that's unacceptable now.
Exactly.
And for further context, Mel Brooks wrote one of the most successful musicals of all time around the song Springtime for Hitler.
That's a good point. All right, so I did not hear that information about the producer of the opening ceremony. Did you know that?
No.
So he's being serious about that. That was somebody that had to quit. All right, a little bit more.
Why do we allow the people who just want to bitch to always win? Days before that firing, the opening ceremony's musical director, was also forced out because someone dug up an interview with him from 1994 where he admitted to bullying classmates as a child. As a child. Remember when your teacher used to try and scare you by saying, "This is going to go on your permanent record"? Yeah. No longer an empty threat now. And the creative director of the entire shebang of the whole Olympics got canned because he once made a fat joke in a private conversation. This is called a purge. It's a mentality that belongs in Stalin's Russia.
Wow.
How bad does this atmosphere we are living in have to get before the people who say cancel culture is overblown admit that is, in fact, an insanity that is swallowing up the world?
I love that Bill Maher is on this tangent, because somebody needs to, you know, with his, at least with his stature, where people are going to listen. And I think there's a lot more people that agree with Bill that aren't willing to say it. But I had not heard about those controversies. And then you have, you know, maybe you could sit back and say, the Olympics, no matter what's happening with some of the wokeness and the athletes and Simone Biles, at least we have a country that we can get behind and really, truly root on here in America, right? Not if you talk to college students. So check this out.
The Olympic trials, we saw U.S. Olympic athlete Gwen Berry. She turned her back on the flag during the national anthem. Do you think she was right to do this?
100%. Given what's been going on with this country and how divided our politics have been, there's not really a reason to stand for one within the country like
what?
That anyway, so I agree with it.
Personally, I do. You know, people would argue that You know, it,
hey, that guy's not real. Is that guy real right there?
That was real.
He sounds like Kermit the Frog.
It's a sign of disrespect to do that, but standing away during the national anthem or doing whatever to the flag, you know, that's a form of protest, and that's a right.
If she feels that it's something that she's responsible to do, then I think it's okay.
Do you think it's embarrassing that, you know, our own athletes who are on Team USA aren't even proud to be an American, it seems like?
I don't think so, because I don't like being an American either, even though I'm born here. I think there is such corruption and a crumbling infrastructure. Like, why is there no free health care? Why are so many people suffering because of housing? And that is such a great example of how corrupt it is.
She says that with her iPhone in tow and probably a lot of other things, too, that she hates the country. So you might argue, you know, Campus Reform is a group that does these, and we've aired them for many years, and every time I hear some of these, I think, well, they're just trying to find, you could talk to a bunch of people, and you're going to find a few people like this, but they seem to find a lot of them.
Do you think athletes should be allowed to express their political beliefs or protest during the Olympics?
I believe so. Either way, no matter what they do, the Olympics or anything is going to be used for politics, because even if, let's say, the U.S. wins or any other country, that country is going to use their win to show that our country is the best and whatnot.
Do you think the United States is the greatest country?
Look at me. No, I don't.
Do you think athletes should be allowed to demonstrate their political beliefs or protest at the Olympics?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm not sure about the history of the athlete herself, her race or her ethnicity, and why she did it.
This instills confidence in the youths of America, doesn't it?
Of a certain race or ethnicity?
No, but it depends on the context of it.
If athletes are on Team USA, do you think they have a duty to represent the United States of America in a positive light?
They have a duty to represent their country athletically, sure, but they don't have any obligation to represent it good or bad.
If they're not comfortable saying something or doing something, they shouldn't have to. It's not their job. They're athletes.
No, my only duty is to go there, compete as an athlete, and bring home gold. But that doesn't have to be for the country. That could be for me and my teammates.
Actually, that's like the whole goal of the Olympics, right? It's for you're representing your country. You have people that actually live in this country who are representing other countries because that is their homeland. But one more here. This is stunning. It really is.
Going to be rooting for Team USA?
I don't root for countries. I root for athletes.
Will you be rooting for Team USA?
I'm going to be rooting for athletes individually. I'm not going to be rooting for any team just because it's some country that I live in, because the truth is patriotism shouldn't be that strong. I'm in this country because I was born in it and because it gives me some opportunities. It doesn't mean that there aren't things to fix, so I'm not going to root on someone just because they come from the same place as me.
I would love, that kid in particular, I would love to do a little GoFundMe and send him as far away as humanly possible, and I think we could raise a lot of money.
I'm not proud to live in a country where I can't even go down my own neighborhood see people putting up their Blue Lives Matter flags telling me that my life doesn't matter.
I root for particular athletes rather than the country as a whole.
If you were to ask me, in the last administration, maybe not.
So now that Biden's in office, you'll root for Team USA.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I guess when you say it like that.
Are you rooting for Team USA in the Olympics?
Of course, yes. Go Team USA.
Go Team USA.
Oh, there's one.
Go Team USA.
So would you be willing to give me a Go Team USA chant?
Nah, that's not going to be me. I'm sorry.
I mean, they found a lot of numbskulls out there across the country, making us proud, ladies and gentlemen. 324, Senator Roy Blunt's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Sue's News after 4, Frank Cusimano, and a lot more, all on a Monday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. 97.1 FM Talk, hang in there. Hey, how about this weather right now in St. Louis? For August, not too bad. Low dew points will keep you posted throughout the afternoon. Sue's News coming up after 4 o'clock. Frank Cusimano at 4:45. Senator Roy Blunt is with us this afternoon to talk about several things that are happening. And I thought, Senator, that I wasn't going to have to keep going back to the COVID well and say, where are we with COVID right now? Because I thought we were on the improve, but seemingly we're not on the improve. But what do you make of everything with Delta right now? Missouri, obviously, the focus of a lot of this coverage.
Well, it has been, though I do think that what we've seen with this with this particular virus is it's resilient. It can adapt. We've thought we knew the cause for a while, then we didn't know that, then didn't transmit the way we thought it was transmitting, didn't have a sense of of just how long-lasting this particular virus would be. But the other thing I've noticed, Mark, in the year and a half now that we've been dealing with this, is that the minute you begin to think you're doing everything right and somebody else is doing everything wrong, then suddenly it flips around the other way.
Well, that's
and
true.
So, you know, who knows if we're extraordinary in the last month or so in our state, or we're at a different point in fighting the virus. You know, 6 months ago, everybody thought that Florida had done exactly what was the right thing to do, even though they'd taken a different tack than most other states. Now Florida has a problem. So the one thing I've decided here is you should never assume that what you're seeing at the moment is the whole picture of what's going to happen with this particular virus. That's why it's really important to try to eliminate the possibility for these variants to continue to develop. The vaccine has worked really well against variants so far, but eventually a variant might develop that this particular vaccine wouldn't work on, and you'd have to have another vaccine for that variant. But so far, the vaccines do appear to be doing what they're supposed to do. And, you know, people get the virus that have had the vaccine. But of course, that's exactly what we thought would happen when it was about, you know, 88% effective or 94% effective. That would mean, say it's an average of 90% effective. That would mean if you know 20 people that had the vaccine, and we now all know 20 people that had the vaccine, two of them will still get the virus. But the good news has been, if you're those two people out of 20 that get the virus and you've had the vaccine, you don't have very big consequences. You almost never go to the hospital and you don't die. And so you obviously, if you're going to get the virus, you want to get the virus after you've had the vaccine, not before.
Senator, do you have any insight as to why it takes so long for the FDA to approve these vaccines? I saw one goal date of January of 2022 for FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine. So what is it that is, because I think that might be just one of those things that is leading to some hesitancy. Obviously, there's other factors as well.
Well, I think it could, and I do have some insight in that. Now, they may be able to make a all-hands-on-deck effort and get that final approval quicker than they have thought. But up until now, what I've thought has been the case is that in the normal 30,000 cohort that takes the vaccine, you watch them for 2 or 3 years, and by the time you approve the vaccine, you know if you need to have a booster shot or not. You know if that's really probably the principal thing you know. What we did know when the vaccines got emergency approval was that they were safe and 80 or 95% effective, but we didn't know a lot of things you would know after you watched that same 30,000 people for 2 or 3 years, which is what usually happens with a fully approved vaccine. And I think the FDA has decided you're exactly right, that there's enough concern about what it means you have an emergency approval that I think they're making a greater effort to go ahead and move toward that final approval. But remember, if it hadn't been for President Trump's effort and his administration effort to fast forward on encouraging that not only the vaccine be approved, but a lot of doses of it be available when it was approved, we might not have a vaccine even yet. 18 months would be a year and a half ahead of the normal vaccine, and thank goodness that we didn't wait for 2 years or 2.5 years to have the first vaccine shot in the first arm outside the 30,000 people in America that were being tested to see how that vaccine would react.
Senator Roy Blunt, my guest this afternoon. I'm looking at an AP story that cleared this afternoon about how there are progressives and pro-White House groups that are going to spend about $100 million in the month of August to promote the president's agenda. Infrastructure is still kind of hanging in the balance. How do you see this moving forward as we get to the fall?
Well, I hope to be able to be for the traditional infrastructure bill, the one that would look at our infrastructure above the ground, the roads, highways, airports, ports, railroad connections that happen that make all of that work together more seamlessly. I'm for all of that. I'm for the underground. We always thought would be infrastructure like water lines and sewer lines and things that actually do eventually wear out, plus broadband, the addition of broadband to that sense of infrastructure. We'll see. We're just now beginning the debate on that 2,700-page bill today that is about $550 billion of money that wouldn't have been spent otherwise, and about that same amount that we would have spent on those same things in the normal course of things. That's why you occasionally hear this difference. One group says, well, it's $560 or $70 billion of new spending, and the other group says, well, it's $1.2 trillion of spending, and both are right. But I hope to be for that. I don't intend to be for the $3 or $4 or $5 trillion of new government programs with money that we don't have, and reversing the tax cuts of 2017 to get part of the money that would be spent in that huge spending package.
So how, because I would expect that you would not be for that, and a lot of Republicans wouldn't be. They're going to try to shove some of this stuff down the American people's throats. Obviously, the Senate plays a vital role in stopping that. But how do you get to that bipartisan compromise that you would perhaps have as a goal?
Well, we'll see. I think if the Senate passes this infrastructure bill, I know the Speaker of the House says that she won't deal with the traditional infrastructure unless they get another bill that has all of this new government program spending in it. I don't know that that's sustainable. I think you have to take these bills one at a time and look at the first bill and decide, is this good for America? Is this good for Missouri? And I think the answer is going to be yes, yes. And will it pay for itself with the enhanced economic activity and other things? And I think the answer to that is yes. And then we'll just see what happens with the second bill. I think some of my colleagues will decide that, well, no, we don't want to be on vote for the first bill because that somehow enables the second bill to occur. For me personally, that's not the right way to look at this. The one thing I've learned over quite a long time of watching government, being part of government, things will happen you don't expect, and big things will happen you don't expect. So anticipating what Nancy Pelosi might do with another bill 100 days from now is probably not the best way to look at this first bill, which is about infrastructure that President Trump thought we needed, President Obama thought we needed it, and we haven't done it in that 12-year window that two different presidents said we need to spend about $1 trillion on infrastructure. And we do, and good transportation policy is good for us because we live in a place where one of our big advantages is we are the transportation hub for the country in so many ways, right where we live.
One final question. Any insight, or I guess the question would be, any opinion of what happened with the January 6th commission on the other side last week?
Yeah, I don't know that I have a strong opinion on that. I think the House and Speaker Pelosi were going to have a committee, no matter what, that looked at this. I'm very supportive of the Capitol Police. I was, like everybody else, touched by their testimony last week. We had similar testimony from Capitol Police in a committee that I was the chairman of for a long time, the Rules Committee, in March, and we came up with a report. We had 85 recommendations. I talked to the new chief of the Capitol Police in my office in the Russell Building. He and I had a chance to talk last week in his first week on the job. I think many of those recommendations are going to be implemented. And I think we're going to find out more about what happened that day when the Justice Department completes their 500-plus prosecutions. There's not going to be any congressional effort or any commission that will find out more about what happened than the Justice Department will when they prosecute 500 people who were involved. And we're going to know a lot more when that's over than we know now, or than the Congress, frankly, will be able to find out. Because the one thing I'll tell you for sure, the Justice Department won't talk to us while those prosecutions are going on.
Right.
And certainly the people being prosecuted, if they've got lawyers, aren't going to talk to the Congress while those prosecutions are going on either.
Senator Blunt, always great to have you on. I appreciate
it.
Appreciate
great to talk to you. See you
started.
Soon.
Yeah, take care.
All right, buddy.
Senator Roy Blunt, as we get the week started from Washington this afternoon, it's 341 97.1 FM Talk. Impatiently awaiting a Monday afternoon edition of Sue's News coming up a little after 4 o'clock this afternoon. Mr. Cusimano will join us with Cardinals news and Olympic takes at 4:45. I want to take some calls a little bit later this afternoon on the optimism that everyone has lost when it comes to COVID. There's some interesting polling on that. And then more and more businesses requiring vaccines to enter the business. So we may jump on some phone calls after 5 o'clock. Jack Coder, alderman in the city of St. Louis, a lot more problems at the city jail and workhouse, of course, and he'll join us with an update. Plus, we have an audio cut of the day. We're joined right now by the state treasurer of Missouri, Scott Fitzpatrick, who is now launching a campaign for another statewide office. Scott, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. Well, so help me out here. You were appointed, if I get any of this wrong, you were appointed by the governor to this position, right? Because we had a little bit of jostling amongst the state office holders, if I remember correctly.
That's correct. Yeah. Eric Schmidt, who was the treasurer, went to the attorney general's office after Josh Hawley went to the Senate. And then I came to the treasurer's office. And then we went through the election last year, and everything kind of got set in stone that way. And now the 2022 cycle is upon us.
And why? Here's my question, Scott. Why do you hate the treasurer's office? Why do you want to get out of that? And it, you know, on a serious note, you're jumping from one state office to another. What makes this more appealing to you?
Well, listen, I love the treasurer's office. And at the end of 2022, I'll have spent four years in the treasurer's office. And we'll, I think, look back on the time that I've spent there and can honestly say that I feel like we already have accomplished a lot. And I think at the end of 4 years, we'll have accomplished even more. But the auditor's office is an office that I'm really interested in, because the reason I got into politics in the first place was just because as a business owner, I was really frustrated in my dealings with government. That's what got me paying attention to politics in the first place. I was frustrated dealing with bureaucrats all the time. I felt like they were wasting our money. And that's why I ran for the House of Representatives back in 2012 and focused on state finance. I became the budget chairman when I was in the House, and spent basically my whole time in the legislature focusing on, you know, on the programs that the state runs and trying to, you know, make the budget, get the budget into better shape. And then, you know, now as treasurer, I've had the opportunity to see government from a different angle, the state government from a different angle, and work with other executive branch agencies. And really the auditor's job is to, you know, dig into the, you know, get into the meat of state government and look at how government works and look at the programs that we run and, you know, look and see if those are being run efficiently, if they're having the intended impact. And I think that's the role the auditor should play. And that's, you know, what I would do if I was the auditor is really get into the details of state government and try to work with the executive branch agencies to make government work better for taxpayers.
Do you have a feeling that, you know, because I always thought, and I don't know the inner workings, but I always thought that Nicole Galloway was doing a rather competent job as auditor. I certainly would have questioned her resume for governor, and she got smoked in that race, so it's sort of irrelevant, and she decides not to run for this. But were there things that have happened in the past several years with that office that you would do differently or did not like?
Well, I've always felt like the auditor's office is should be another kind of leg on the stool of government to try to make government work better. A lot of times, you know, in the past, I think other people have taken a different approach where, you know, the auditor's office was more of like a weapon and was more of an adversarial role to the rest of government. I think that you're going to have the best outcomes when you work, you try to take the audit findings, turn them into recommendations, and work with the other departments of state government and local governments, for that matter, to get those recommendations implemented, as opposed to seeing how bad you can make an audit look so you can have a bigger press conference. And so to me, that's kind of what the role of the auditor should be. I think that, you know, you have to let the audits go where they go. I mean, the facts are what the facts are, and the findings sometimes may not be what, you know, somebody in your own party wants them to be. But it's how you handle that and how you move forward from that point We're going to try to identify what opportunities exist to make things work better and work with, you know, other statewide office holders, other executive branch leaders to implement those findings. I think that's kind of the big, you know, difference in approach.
So, I think we all said when all this was getting handed out during the early stage of the pandemic with the Recovery Act or whatever else is going to be doled out to the American people, I think we all realized, we've seen some early reports of this, that a lot of this money has been misused. There's a lot of fraud and waste. How much authority will the Missouri State Auditor's Office have moving forward in assessing how that money was used? I mean, you're going to focus obviously on governmental entities, but is that going to be part of it with the COVID money that came in?
Absolutely. I mean, there was, you know, in Missouri, over $520 million of coronavirus relief fund money went to, you know, basically local governments in addition to the, that was out of the over $2 billion that came to the state just in the coronavirus relief fund. And it's going to be necessary to look at how that money was spent. I think that, you know, our local government leaders, we're doing a very diligent job working on that. But it's, we're at a point in time where the federal government is spending a tremendous amount of money, and a lot of that is coming through state and local governments. And so, and there's also pretty tight timelines on the amount of time that those governments are given to spend the money. And when you force people to spend a lot of money in a short period of time, a lot of times stupid decisions get made. And so I think we're going to have to, you know, that the role of the auditor, in my opinion, has never been more important as we lead into this kind of era of immense spending. And there's going to need to be a lot of time spent looking at how that money was spent, making sure that the rules were followed, and shining a light on what the results are of that.
Scott Fitzpatrick is with me. He is the state treasurer of Missouri. The former House budget chair is going to seek the nomination for state auditor next year. You just want a full term for state treasurer. So explain how this works then. If you, not that you're not going to win, okay, but if something happens where you don't win in the primary or the general next year, you could still be state treasurer or not?
That's correct. I would remain state treasurer for a period of time after the election if I were to not prevail. And if, you know, in the event that I do prevail, which I think is going to happen, the governor will have the opportunity to appoint a treasurer. And I feel based on my personal experience that he is pretty good at making those selections, and I would trust him to do it again in the event that I went over to the auditor's office.
All right, Scott, thanks for the update this afternoon. I have the governor on tomorrow, I'm told, so he's finally going to join me on Tuesday afternoon. I appreciate the time this afternoon.
Awesome, man. Thanks. Have a good one.
All right, that's Scott Fitzpatrick. He has entered the race for state auditor. It looks like there's a couple of other folks. State Rep David Gregory, who's from the St. Louis area, and the House Speaker Rob Vescovo also thinking about getting into those particular races. We'll see what happens. We'll take a break here at the top of the hour. I got a couple of things I want to toss in. Some audio after 4 o'clock. Sue's News is coming up. Also, Ross Pomeroy. Ross wrote this morning on Real Clear Politics on the science section, you are probably going to be infected with the coronavirus, with the Delta variant. He'll kind of break that down, and his messaging, I think, is interesting. That's at 425. 97.1 FM Talk.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. baseball your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.